James, we're looking at 12 months of John Sheridan at Plymouth Argyle. When you look back to his appointment, was it a difficult decision? Were there many other very strong contenders?
Well, we shortlisted from a very large number down to three fairly quickly, and then we just interviewed three potential candidates. And initially, if I'm honest, when John came in for the interview, it wasn't obvious that he was used to doing interviews. And but when we got into the interview, he was really good, passionate, thoughtful, considered, and it was quite a straightforward, unanimous decision. So we're very keen to get him down here, and he's done a great job for us.
So he had many standout qualities that put him above the other two potentials.
Well, initially, he's quite a quiet person, and he was quite nervous being in front of a group of suits, I think. So he was a bit nervous about it, but when we got through to that sense of humour, he had a very good sense of humour, and he knew exactly what he wanted to do and was very assuring what he could do. So it was a very easy decision in the end.
Please give the fans a unique insight to this. When you deliberate, what are the sort of things that you talk about with the fellow board members from the immediate impact of an interview?
Well, I'll tell you first, if it's helpful, what broke the ice, because, as I say, John was very, very nervous and was giving monosyllabic answers to every question until I said, and I thought, you know, that this interview's not going very well. So I asked him if he remembered a gentleman called David Frio. He looked very nervous and said, I think I remember him. And so I said, well, I think you should do, John, because both of you were sent off together and you went down the tunnel, as I understand it, after you lost your temper with him. And that broke the ice, and then he was very engaged. But it was really the process of the interview was to, you know, take John through where we were in terms of players and so on, which he'd obviously done his homework, and then it was to ask him how he would rebuild the football team and take it to a level that staved off relegation and got us promoted in the next year or two. And he was very convincing as to, he'd thought it through, and he was just very convincing as to how he would go about that.
You've hired personnel in many businesses. So what, in football terms, would you say is the biggest factor that differentiates between your other business life and that of the football club?
Well, it's really looking at managers, and whether they're managers of a hotel business or a retail business or a football club, I think it's fairly similar. It's looking at someone who you say, well, that person can really motivate a team, and that person knows what they want to do, and they've worked out how they're going to go about doing it. So it's different in terms of how you do it, but in terms of that skill set of being someone who can motivate and someone who has got a vision what they want to achieve and has planned out the steps they're going to follow to achieve it, is pretty commonplace across all of those businesses.
And at that point, James, did you set out immediate targets for John Sheridan?
No, it's very interesting. He set his own targets. He'd worked out what he felt he could do. He'd worked out the budget that he felt he needed, and rightly or wrongly, we told him the budget that we had got allocated, which was quite a bit higher than the one that he thought we needed. So maybe we should have kept quiet on that. He told us what he was going to do. It was very clear that the first job was to rebuild confidence and avoid relegation, because we were obviously on a slide at that point and pretty close to the bottom. And the second point was to get us out of the league, the right end, and then start climbing back into the Championship. So
this was at a point, if I remember rightly from a previous discussion that we've had, yeah, that the football club was taking more of your time than you wanted or anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken my time in two ways. One, in terms of the business side of it, and that's relative with Martin Starnes as chief executive. That's relatively straightforward now. It's relatively easy. And the other part that I didn't anticipate is I'm actually spending a lot of time watching games, and I, you know, frankly, I didn't think I'd be doing that. I think I watched 43 out of 46 league games last season and missed one cup game. So it's got its claws into me that way. But the family love coming. I don't bring the whole family in one go, but different kids at different stages, and so it's worked out brilliantly.
Of course, you mentioned survival in the Football League at the end of last season. There was a spell in this season when the club went seven games without a win. Were you getting testy at that point? Were you having thoughts?
No, it's one of the things that John has been very, very consistent with, and he is passionate, and he hates to do anything. I mean, for John, drawing a match is a disaster. It's you know, he's not someone who likes to avoid losing. He's like someone who insists on winning. But so he probably says it better than he does it in terms of passion, but he's always been very clear that to be a good manager, you've got to avoid getting too excited when you're winning and avoid getting too depressed when you're losing.
But he is the 41st longest serving manager now in England, and there are others in your position, James, that have been less patient than yourself.
Yeah, and I really, really don't get that. I mean, I think if you look at the... And I'm relatively new to football, but if you look at the greatest success stories in football in history, it has been people that have been given time to build a team and to build succession to that team and build, you know, to build a team, to build a squad around it, to build a youth setup that delivers players playing in a way that it is not a short-term business. And yet, as you say, it's absolutely ridiculous that someone who's been in post for 12 months is almost in the top half of, well, isn't the top half of football managers. Totally ridiculous.
So is that your other business acumen coming into play here, where you don't get a quick fix? You have to work hard at something, whatever that job is, to get success in the future.
Yeah, I mean, if my view of business is making bets, I mean, not bets as in taking risks, but you have to take decisions, and you have to, and when you take a decision, you clearly monitor your performance against it, and, you know, in football, that's obviously for a football manager's performance on the pitch, but you try to understand underperformance, and you don't just jump in and say someone is underperforming in their job, QED, they're not good at their job, because there's 1,001 different factors, and you know, John is and has been very persuasive that he's got the right individuals, and has been fashioning it into the right team. And watching Port Vale or Oxford or Torquay United, you can now see, even someone who has only been watching football for 3 years, that we have not just good individuals on the pitch now, but we have a real team on the pitch.
And I'm sure the fans would love to find out when he brings a name to you. Of course, you've got to look at the financial aspects of things, but do you have to be convinced, in inverted commas, that this player would be good for Plymouth Argyle, whether it be on a loan spell or a permanent transfer? How does it work?
I genuinely don't. The team, John and his coaching team, and then Martin Stans and Jason Turner, they work out. I mean, we clearly have identified where the positions that that John and his colleagues think we need to strengthen in. But then they come back and they say, we would like to go for X at a cost of Y over a period of Z. And I ask some really, really simple questions like, have you got the budget for it? What other players do you want to bring on? And so very, very simple questions. But they've always thought them through. They've always got the answers. And so I've never said no to any request that's been put forward. So
when you look back at previous decisions you've made, again, this could be applicable to other businesses as well, do you have a smug sense of satisfaction as you look back if you know you've made a right decision and it's paid off?
I genuinely don't, because if you do that, then you get bitten on the bum the next time around.
Is that from experience?
Absolutely right. I mean, I make every day of the week, I make a huge number of errors. Huge number of errors.
Do you?
Absolutely.
This is an admission.
Well, it's the way of the world. If you take a lot of decisions, you get... I mean, if you get 7 out of 10 decisions right and you manage the 3 out of 10 that you get wrong right, then you'll be successful, in my view. But if you try and get every single decision right, you'll end up taking no decisions or very few decisions, because with decisions come risk. So I'm a great believer in you try and get as smart as you can before you take a decision.
You're even more calculated than I imagined.
Really? I'm called Harry Potter, you know, so.
But is that the advice you would give anybody in life? Is,
yeah,
be prepared to make mistakes.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
And it can be costly.
It can be very costly, but not taking decisions can be even more costly. And it's very interesting. What I've seen in football is people are... You can take a decision, which is a decision to do nothing, because you think that nothing is the best is the best you can achieve. People are very, very frightened in doing that in football in a way that they're not in business, because if you don't take a decision to change, the presumption is that you're too frightened of taking a decision. Whereas in practice, you're just saying, I've weighed things up, and there's risk in each of these options, but I think there's lower risk and better potential outcome in doing nothing than there is in doing something.
Finally, James. Yeah, finally. I asked you about targets, but the next 12 months, we've had a year with John at the helm now of the footballing side of the club. What does the future bring to Plymouth Argyle? How do you answer that question?
Well, I've said, and I've been criticised for it before, but I again believe it. If you don't start a season, or if you don't start a second half of the season, and you don't have an aspiration to get promoted, I think you should go and do something different, because it's this is all about winning and delivering success, isn't it? So the answer is unfortunate. I mean, while we're in League Two, our aspiration, our principal aspiration, is always going to be to get promoted to League One. And when we're in League One, our principal aspiration is to be promoted to the Championship. And there we go. You know, and our aspiration in the FA Cup is not to go out. I mean, clearly it is very helpful to the club to get the additional income in, and it enables us to sort of move forward in terms of debt repayments and investment in the team and so on. So it's important from that standpoint. But the reason we're in the FA Cup is to win football matches, and you know, that's how we'll be judged. It's not about just generating additional revenue.